This morning and this evening too. It's been good to be together worshiping God. I feel like this is not. All right, there we go. Okay, we're still in the Proverbs. So today is actually our last time to our last lesson in the book of Proverbs. And as you've come to know as we work through this, we are all over that book. As we work through this, we're doing this sort of in a thematic type of way. And as we've talked about several times now, as we go through Proverbs, there's not necessarily a flow that we see. Of course, there's a couple places where it seems to be arranged in a theme, but for the most part, it seems like the different themes that are touched upon are scattered throughout the book. And so we're going to look at a bunch of passages today. I was doing youth ministry at a congregation in Oklahoma City and really enjoying that work. I had the opportunity to go to a conference, and there I heard a man named Jim Burns speak about youth ministry. And as he was talking about the work of a youth minister and youth ministries within a church, he said something that for those of us who were attending that conference, and especially some of the friends that I was spending that time with, and as we were able to talk and discuss youth ministry, he said something that just really made us think. And he said, for the most part, in the youth ministries that I've witnessed, they run against the grain of what I believe to be of crucial importance in the development of children. He went on to say, youth ministries are not encouraging and supporting family ministry like they ought to. He had just written a book called Family-Based Youth Ministry, and so he had been spending a whole lot of time studying the importance of the role of the family within the church, but that stuck with me, and it influenced the way I did youth ministry from that point forward, thinking about ways to engage the family and to support and encourage parents in their role as mentors, as those who are raising their children to know Jesus. And so I thought just a whole lot about that. And so the Proverbs we're going to look at today talk about the importance of families and the family relationship. Before getting to our first proverb, which is chapter 14, verse 1, I'd like to read a familiar passage to all of us, Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 9. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. The words of the Lord, and specifically love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength, are to be communicated on a regular basis within the family context according to Deuteronomy chapter 6, 4 through 9. This is referred to as the Shema, which just comes from hear, O Israel, to be talked about all the time. Imagine how transformative it would be to be continually speaking and seeing these words. These words were also included in the Jewish prayers. These words were continually on the lips of the people and in front of the people's faces. Impress them on your children is what they're told. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Allow these words to be woven into the fabric of your life. allow these words, love the Lord your God, to be woven into the fabric of your life. We might even say into the life of your family. So over to the Proverbs now, chapter 14 and verse 1. We're going to look at three Proverbs that relate to women to start off. 14:1. The wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with their own hands. Let's look at chapter 12 and verse 4. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is like rottenness in his bones. There it is. And then we're thinking about Proverbs about women. We have to go over to chapter 31. For our purposes this evening, I'm just going to read verses 10 through 12. Proverbs 31, 10 through 12. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. So we think of the historical context that these words would have come to the community of faith from the wisdom writer, including Solomon. As we've mentioned, this was a patriarchal society. That does not in any way demean the role of women in that society, but the reality is that it was a patriarchal society. The wife did play an important role in the life of the family, often taking a primary role in taking care of the children, in preparing the meals for the family, even working on the family farm. There were many roles, making the clothes that the children would wear, that the family would wear. The women played an important role within the household context. A scholar named Daniel Block wrote this about Adam and Eve. He said the Hebrew word for Eve is helper. The phrase represents an extraordinary expression of human community. Man and woman, husband and wife, complementing each other in the divine enterprise of governing and filling the earth. Complementing one another in this divine enterprise. And so in this section of Proverbs, we see that women do play an important role. There is a call for them in how they act within the family context. Block went on to say that Eve was created from Adam's side. And we've heard this before. Likely you've heard it before. Eve came from Adam's side, not from the feet, not from his head. They complement each other. They are a divine relational team in the role of glorifying God and working for his purposes. We think of Proverbs directed more toward men. The first one is in chapter 1 and verse 8. Chapter 1 and verse 8. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. And then Proverbs 19 and verse 27. Cease listening, my son, to discipline, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. So the words to the son here are to listen to the instructions. And sons need to be reminded to listen. I've been there before. Some of you have been there before. Listen to your mother and father. Be humble enough to be teachable by your parents. Listen to their instructions. We know from the word of the law, Ten Commandments, honor your mother and father. That includes being teachable, learning from them, hearing their instructions. And it also says, cease listening, my son, to discipline, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. The opposite of that is to listen to discipline. And this idea of discipline is the teaching, the correcting, the rebuking, the instruction from the parents. Be open to it. Be shaped by it. Allow yourself to be shaped by it. Let's go on and look at Proverbs directed more so to children. And I'll have several observations at the conclusion of this lesson. Proverbs directed toward children. Listen to your father, or this is Proverbs 23:22. Sorry about that. Proverbs 23:22. Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. There's words about listening again. So very important. Think of the Shema, Deuteronomy chapter 6. What was the first word? Hear, O Israel. Proverbs 28 and 24. Proverbs 28 and 24. He who robs his father or his mother and says, it is not a transgression, it's not a sin, it's not wrong, is the companion of a man who destroys. It's a companion of a man who destroys. And so this goes back to this the idea of honoring mother and father. If you're honoring your mother and father, you will not rob them. Stating the obvious there. Proverbs 13 and verse 1. Proverbs 13, verse 1. A wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Once again, accepting discipline and teaching, rebuking, correcting that the father offers. In 15:5, a fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is sensible. And then one final one in this category, chapter 30 and verse 17. The eye that mocks a father and scorns a mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out, and the young eagles will eat it. Got some powerful imagery there again. We get that from these wisdom writers. Okay, now we're going to look at Proverbs directed toward parents. The first one is chapter 29 and verse 17. Correct your son, and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. We see this a lot, correcting and disciplining, teaching. 23:13-14. 23:13-14. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. You shall strike him with the rod and rescue his soul from Sheol, from this valley of death, this abyss of death. Okay, we got to talk about this idea of the rod, right? You want to see a good conversation brew up in a hurry, start talking about sparing the rod and spanking and these kind of conversations. The Hebrew word is shevet for rod. It refers to a staff, a stick, it could be a pole of some sort. It can be translated in different ways. It is translated in different ways throughout the Old Testament. Oftentimes, it is used to talk about striking something. It is used to in striking something. Many really have talked about it in the sense that it's to be used figuratively. A rod in the sense of through words and maybe other forms of correction. You might be thinking time out. Put them back on the path. And if you're thinking about God's word here, offer them God's teaching so they can stay on the right path. Sans rod. So you can think of it in that way. We'll say some more about it here in just a second. 22:15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. So this the rod of discipline, we've talked a lot about discipline already in the passages that we've looked at, will remove foolishness from a child. It's been bound up in the heart of a child. Chapter 13 and verse 24. 13:24. He who withholds his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. And then 22 and verse 6. Sort of the culmination of all of this, if you will. I train up a child on the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Something about that verse. I have been in conversation with folks who have quoted this passage when talking about a child who was raised in the church by really good folks and departed from the way. Remember what we have said about the Proverbs. They speak in a general nature about the things and ways and purposes of God. They speak in a general way about that. So there have been very faithful parents who trained up their children in the way they should go. And when they got older, they did depart from that way. It happens. None of this is cut and dry necessarily. It's speaking in a general way. All of us should take this to heart. That doesn't mean, well, you could do a great job and the child will depart. So, yeah, we're just going to kind of see what happens, kind of take a laissez-faire approach toward parenting. No, this is a strong reminder to us of the importance of training our children up in the way of God. And I'm using sort of the Shema there as the foundation for that. Teach them the things of God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Going back to this idea of rod, it may not need to be said, but we're not talking about abuse here, right? We can make that clear. When we talk about rod, we're not talking about abuse. In the Proverbs, what we've looked at, and this especially the first 2 weeks of this lesson series, we talked a whole lot about wisdom. If the rod is going to be used in the sense of striking a child, it must be rooted in wisdom. As a parent, being wise. There may be some of you here that are absolutely dead set against striking a child and spanking. My mom used a spatula, so I'll just get that out there right now, right? And I haven't departed from the way yet. So I'll just go ahead and say it. Some of you may be opposed to that. And I would say that's your prerogative to do that. But there's pretty good consensus that rod here is not talking about a simply figurative type of rod. That's the consensus upon scholarship. So the church, I've said this so many times, the church is the first family. One's most important birth is the new birth in Jesus Christ. One's most important birth is new birth in Jesus Christ. And when one is born through Jesus Christ, they are introduced, they're welcomed into a new family, the family of believers, the church. So I need to say that, first of all, the church is the first family. That's what Rodney Clapp calls it that. The church is the first family. But that does not negate the importance of the biological nuclear family that God has blessed us with. God is relational. He had Adam and Eve, and then they had children. And so what we see from the New Testament, whether it's Ephesians chapter 5 or Colossians chapter 3 and 4, God calls humankind, calls Christians to have a family that grows and develops in the faith, the love of God. The biological family plays a crucial role in the development of children, especially, and the family plays a crucial role in the church family. But we have to hold these together. The church is the first family, but the biological family is crucial as well. So we can just kind of hold those two together. So what we've seen in these different Proverbs is the importance of discipline, of instruction, and I would say a strong love, dedication, commitment to the Word of God. Even thinking back to the Shema, the Word is to fill the life of the family, and it really comes down to this. If I could talk about my own family for just a moment, I'm so thankful that my parents just taught it, made sure that I was at Bible class, even as a teenager when I really didn't want to go to Bible class Sunday morning or Wednesday night or whatever. They made me go. You know, they made me go, and I am so thankful for it. And now I'm fortunate enough to be able to have a child, and I've thought about this several times, even just recently, when we're before Adeline goes to bed, when we're praying with her and reading scripture to her, I just think I've been given this incredible gift, but also this incredible responsibility to see that this little girl falls in love with Jesus. I'm called to have a role in that. I can't shirk that duty, but it's a privilege and it's a gift that I have, and I'm so very thankful for it. But this is where I'm going with this, though. This is that church is the first family, and then I have a role too. You have a role in seeing that Adeline falls in love with Jesus. You all have a role in that. And I have a role in helping all of you and helping your children, if you have children, to fall in love with Jesus as well. We're all in this. We're in this together. And so a community of faith, the Israelites, they would have been reading what we see here in the Proverbs. They would have been reading all of this. And they would have been reading, train up a child in the way it should go. Teach your children, sons, daughters, listen to your parents. Parents, teach your children the way of God. We're all in this together as the family of believers. It is a gift, a privilege, and a wonderful responsibility that we all have. That's all. If there's anybody here that is ready to be baptized tonight, we would just think it just the most awesome thing to witness you make that decision. If there's anybody here tonight that needs the prayers of the church family, we'd be glad to pray with you if you need those prayers. So whatever needs you have, you can come forward now as we stand and continue our time of worship.